May it please the Court, my name is Steve Zabel, and I represent the appellant Brown & LeCount in this case. Brown & LeCount is seeking insurance coverage under its lawyer's professional liability policy for a lawsuit that was instituted against it by the Saginaw Chippewa Tribe of Michigan. In that lawsuit, the tribe alleged that Brown, acting as the tribe's attorney, wrongfully failed to obtain approval from the Department of Interior for Brown's legal services contract. They could represent them. They couldn't get approval for the billing arrangements. They could not bill them. I believe so. I believe it's only the billing arrangements that are at issue here, Your Honor. So they were acting as their attorney, but they wrongfully failed according to the tribe. Now, this is a disputed issue, of course, in the under. The law firm did apply for permission to the Bureau of Indian Affairs, yes. They did not. Your Honor, I'm not a real expert on the underlying action. I'm just, under Wisconsin law, all we can deal with is the four corners of the complaint brought by the tribe. That's what the tribe alleged, and that's what we have to look at in order to decide. In the underlying case, the only issue is whether they had a right to bill them for their representation. That's correct, Your Honor. That's correct, Your Honor, but did. That's correct. That's correct. That's correct. Your Honor, this is not a traditional malpractice claim. There is no claim that the tribe was harmed by the quality of the legal work. There is no claim that the tribe had any financial detriment. What this is a professional liability policy that provides much more coverage than what is in a traditional malpractice sense. And it says that we will cover you if you're acting as a lawyer and giving rendition and in the rendition of your legal services. And in this case, the allegations of the complaint make it absolutely clear that Brown was, in fact, acting as the tribe's lawyer and part and parcel of its duties to the tribe were to go and get this approval from the Bureau of Indian Affairs. The allegation that is an act the claim is that they wrongfully failed to do that.
As
they tried and did not succeed.
They should not have
continued to bill them. That is, whether you call it malpractice or not, I don't know, but the term malpractice is never in this policy. This is a professional liability policy with a very broad grant of coverage. And if it's in the rendition of their legal services as a lawyer, it's covered.
Well,
the, who's they, Your Honor? I'm just so I'm...
The attorney seeks to have the insurance company pay for his fees that they successfully sued him for, am I correct?
Not necessarily, Your Honor.
What is the damage?
The damages that the tribe is seeking falls into two components. They want restitution of the fees paid out, and they want the fees that they incur in prosecuting the action against Brown and McCown.
Do you think of any of that? Your client wants them to not only defend against that second one, the fees that they incur, but to stand good for the fees that he has to give back.
Under Wisconsin's estoppel rule, that would be correct. Now, if I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't hear you. It is partially, Your Honor, and the policy says, now it is important to remember this, that the policy doesn't contain any exclusions that says we're not going to provide any coverage to you in a suit for fees. What it does is in the definition of law, that's a different area, Your Honor. There is a specific area where the insurance contract addresses fees. In the definition of loss, it says we will pay the monetary and compensatory portion of any judgment award or settlement. An attorney fee award is a compensatory monetary damage. Then it goes on in its definition to say, but loss does not include restitution of fees. So if there's $400,000 in restitution of fees and $100,000 in attorney's fees, part of that is covered by the policy, and if any part of a complaint is covered in the indemnification realm, then the insurance company has a duty to defend the entire claim. Now, you brought up the profit, what I'll call the personal profit exclusion. That exclusion says that if any insured receives a personal profit to which he or she is not legally entitled, we're not going to pay for that claim. Now, in this case here, the key terms are he or she. A law firm cannot be a he or she. That's
a law firm used to be a he or she, because you can't practice law except as a he or she.
A law firm is a sexless entity. It's a limited liability partnership. They don't have a sex.
For a very specific purpose, it's only to make sure that you can have a retirement. That's the reason they did it. But in a place that practices law,
but the insurance policy recognizes a difference between the corporation and the individuals in the corporation, and it says, yes, there are several people who are individuals, people in the legal sense, the limited liability partnership and these two attorneys that were members of the corporation. But nowhere does the policy suggest that the limited liability partnership has a sex. The limited liability partnership will, but it is perhaps true that there will be an indirect benefit to the lawyers within the partnership. It's not in the record, Your Honor, but I think it's fair to assume that there would be an indirect benefit to the partnership.
Why is it indirect?
Because the payment goes to the insured entity that is the limited liability partnership. Now, in this case, it may very well, if it's the attorney's fees component, the limited liability partnership isn't going to get that. What it's going to go on is to the people that represented Brown and LeCount in the action against the tribe. The partners don't get the benefit of that other than they have a debt erased. But what happens if you come to a fork in the road when you look at this exclusion? On one hand, you either give the words he or she effect and deem it that it has to be a profit, an illegal profit, directly obtained by a human being, an individual, or you don't give those words effect. And I submit to this court that the only proper way to read it, an insurance policy, and especially an exclusion in insurance policy, is to give those words effect. And in that case, the the exclusion has to read, any insured who is a he or a she receives a illegal profit, then there is no coverage. And I can give an illustration of what that's like. Unfortunately, we had a situation in Minnesota a few years ago where a named partner in a law firm lied about the amounts of settlement he was receiving for his client and only paid a portion, pocketed the rest, didn't give it to the partnership. That is a situation where this would apply. Now I'm into my rebuttal time, and I'm going to come back unless there's any other questions from the court.
May it please the court, Your Honors. My name is Ross Smek, and I represent Westport Insurance Company, the defendant and appellee. As Your Honors referred to during Mr. Zabel's argument, there are various coverage issues, four to be exact. Westport has raised issues regarding the definition of loss, as counsel mentioned. There is also the definition of a wrongful act, which Your Honors discussed, was in the where Westport's grant of coverage is limited to the actual rendition of legal services. There is also a provision in the insuring agreement, Your Honors, that says that the loss must be by reason of a wrongful act. So even assuming we have a wrongful act, i.e. the rendition of legal services, the loss must be by reason of it, and I will address that as we go along. And then finally, we come to Judge Shabazz's correct interpretation of the personal profit exclusion, which Your Honors mentioned, has to deal with any insured. Now, if Your Honors look at my briefs and look at the policy, you will note that insured is capitalized in the language of the exclusion. That is an unambiguous reference, as Judge Shabazz found, to a carefully crafted policy definition. The policy definition of insured lists five entities and or human beings that can possibly be insured. And the first one is the named insured. In this case, the named insured, without question, is Brown & LeCount LLP. Counsel argues that the he or she limitation that comes later in the exclusion should limit the definition of insured for the purposes of the exclusion. However, the exclusion must be read as a whole. And there is absolutely no reasonable reading that can read out of the definition of the insured the actual person whose name appears on the artificial person, granted, that appears on the declaration sheet. The second argument that's been raised by counsel in his briefs is that the exclusion relied upon by Judge Shabazz says the loss, there must be a personal profit in which the insured in fact was not legally entitled to. Now the in fact language, they suggest, requires an insurance company to basically prove the case that has been raised against the insured. Certainly we cannot apply such a reading to every policy because we'll never have coverage issues resolved that way. In fact, in this case, there were specific allegations of disgorgement. They being the tribe wants their fees back. They did not. The firm did not get approval from the Secretary of the Interior as they should have. They want them back. This is all that this case boils down to, Your Honors. Counsel admits that there is an unambiguous definition in the policy, and if I may move on to the insuring agreement. There is an unambiguous provision under the definition of loss that says, quite simply, return of fees is not covered. The tribe, Your Honors, made it very easy for us. Their requests for relief, their prayers for relief in the underlying action in the tribal court said, we want a return of fees. They used that very language. The vast majority of the prayers for relief in the underlying case are simply not covered. In the words of Wisconsin, of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, and under Wisconsin law, it is not even fairly debatable. There's absolutely nothing to discuss there. The only way, the only even remotely possible way that coverage could be found in this case is that additional request for relief that says, we want the fees incurred as a result of our having to get our fees back in the tribal court. Now, counsel argues that under the definition of loss, under the policy, that that is compensatory. Compensatory, as we cite in our brief, has to refer to damages. One cannot divorce compensatory and damages. It's just simply impossible. And there are many cases, Your Honors, that do say under the American rule, attorney's fees incurred in prosecuting an action are not compensatory. They do not compensate the plaintiff for the actual loss that is alleged in the complaint. Finally, Your Honors, I come to what seems to be the court's main point, and that is the definition of wrongful act in the policy. The definition of wrongful act requires rendition of legal services. There is simply no allegation of negligence, of any wrongdoing that actually required any legal skill. And it was perhaps negligent, Your Honor. Again, it is not negligent vis-a-vis the client in this case. The client happening to be an Indian tribe and subject to special rules and regulations. If anything, the firm in this case was negligent vis-a-vis itself. It knew that if it did not obtain the Secretary of the Interior's permission to build this firm, they would not be able to collect the fees, and they would be subject to just such an action as they're facing today. I understand that, Your Honor. However, certainly, and of course, then we wouldn't be in this litigation because. It is certainly a risk, but it is, again, a risk that is undertaken by the firm to its own detriment. The firm has to make sure that it's operating. No, it cannot, Your Honor, certainly. But it cannot be guilty of malpractice. We certainly agree, and therein lies our argument that I raised some moments ago regarding the personal profit exclusion, where the he or she limitation that is suggested by the firm in this case cannot apply. It is an unreasonable reading per se, because again, as Your Honor points out, a he or a she must practice law. Certainly, Your Honor, we agree with that. Because, as Your Honor points out.
Can you think of a third possibility? Validation of formal agreement. Formal agreement.
The only possibility, Your Honor, I can think of is, again, in this case, the billing was done through the limited liability partnership. And therefore, the limited liability partnership is the one that is, I agree, technically on the hook to return those fees. I agree.
Okay.
And therefore, if billing is not malpractice, and again, I'll pop over to the insuring agreement of the policy, we don't have the rendition of legal services, which is required specifically by the policy, which is not alleged in the underlying complaint. Therefore, my client has no duty to defend, no duty to indemnify, and simply put, Your Honors, the policy is not triggered. It is a professional liability policy, and the specific language of this policy, Your Honor, says legal. Allow me to read it. And what we're dealing with here is the definition of a wrongful act, which in part triggers the insuring agreement. Wrongful act means any act, error, omission, circumstance, or breach of duty in the rendition of legal services for others in the insured's capacity as a lawyer and arising out of the conduct of the insured's profession as a lawyer.
That's what's called an errors and omission policy.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
So therefore, again, the rendition of legal services in this case is key, as well as something that I haven't brought up before, the insured's profession as a lawyer. We cite in our brief the Harrod case from the Third Circuit. It set forth, some 20 years ago, Your Honor, the distinction between the professional aspect of practicing law and the commercial aspect of practicing law. The professional aspect deals with doing what a lawyer does in his everyday job as a lawyer, drafting complaints, answers, taking discovery, what we do here today. This is what a lawyer does.
Representing a client.
There is exactly, it is representing oneself, because that deals with what the Harrod Court called the commercial aspect of the practice of law. Anybody can send a bill for any type of legal service, for any type of service, period. Physicians, accountants, architects. Everybody sends bills to everybody else. Invoices go up. That's how commerce is accomplished. It does not require any legal training or legal skill in order to send somebody a bill and in order to make sure that one is operating properly in sending that bill. In this case, we have admittedly a special situation. It's a law firm that has to get approval from the Secretary of the Interior. However, that does not mean that anybody else does not need to get special approval when they enter into a contract and when they perform under that contract and when they send invoices under that contract. I would like to make one final point. I see my time is running short. The firm has raised the issue of estoppel under Wisconsin law. As we point out in our brief, we believe that coverage was not even fairly debatable in this case. We believe that, therefore, Westport was within its rights to decline coverage at the outset of the litigation and upon the reporting of the claim. However, the firm has also raised the issue that there is, according to them, an apparent immediacy requirement that if a insurer wants to deny coverage under Wisconsin law, it must immediately issue a deck action. We take issue with that, and of course I don't have to remind this court of its role under the Erie Doctrine, but this court must look to the decisions of the highest court in Wisconsin. We cite in our brief the Maury decision, which basically says all that is required under Wisconsin law is that an insurer make sure that the coverage issues are resolved before the underlying case goes to trial. As far as we know, the underlying case has not gone to trial. As far as we know, the underlying case is nowhere close to going to trial. The coverage issues were resolved by Judge Shabazz well before any significant activity occurred in the underlying case, as far as we know. Counsel hasn't said anything to the contrary. Nothing in the brief suggests anything to the contrary. We believe that that is the proper analysis under Wisconsin law, and therefore no estoppel should apply in this case. based on those two factors. Thank you very much, Your Honors.
It seems to the major sticking point is whether or not there was the act or the failure to act appropriately vis-a-vis the Department of Interior was in fact part of the rendition of legal services to the tribe. And in fact, it was. It was part and parcel of their responsibility to the tribe. Those regulations are there for the protection of the tribe. It isn't just for the attorney firm, or for the attorneys or their law firm. It is for the protection of the tribe. When you act as an attorney for a Indian tribe in the United States of America, you have extra responsibilities as an attorney. The tribe said you failed me as an attorney. This was part and parcel of their acts as an attorney and in their rendition of legal services to this tribe. As far as the loss goes, I cited no less than 6 Wisconsin cases and 1 Seventh Circuit case that says that attorney's fees are compensatory in nature. Westport Westport is urging this court to engraft a damages limitation onto the policy. There is no such limitation in the policy. It is improper to engraft one later. As far as the question of whether an attorney personally or a law firm can commit malpractice, in this case, you're right, Your Honor, only an attorney can commit malpractice, but looking at this exclusion talks about the insureds that are listed in the policy, and whether a LLP can commit malpractice or not is irrelevant for terms of this exclusion because it is undisputed that a limited liability partnership can receive a profit or advantage, and apparently sometimes they can be illegal profits or advantages. So therefore, I submit that there has been a breach of the duty to defend. Wisconsin law is absolutely clear. Even if coverage is debatable, the insurance company must defend. It can save itself by immediately instituting a deck action. That's what the Wisconsin Court of Appeals has said. If it fails to do either of those, it is in breach of its duty to defend. And if it breaches its duty to defend, it is stopped from later challenging or litigating any other coverage issues and is responsible for the entire amount of the award or settlement. Any further questions?
Thank you.